Hello, and welcome back to Surgery 101, the podcast series brought to you with the help of the Department of Surgery at the University of Alberta. It's been quite a busy week here at Surgery 101. I gave the TEDMed live talk yesterday here at the University of Alberta, all about our experience with this podcast series and our plans for the future. If you'd like to keep up to date with our plans for the rest of this year and beyond, please visit us at surgery101.org, or you can follow us on Twitter or on Facebook. In this episode, we'll be hearing from a new Surgery 101 expert, Eric Biker, who'll be addressing the slightly scary topic of trauma thoracotomy. He'll be starting with a scenario of a patient who requires a trauma thoracotomy, and he'll be stopping and considering how we might do it, how we open the chest, and what we do when we're in the chest. He'll be talking about scary things like open cardiac massage and cross-clamping. And then after that, we're going to talk a little about indications, contraindications, and outcomes from the procedure. So, let's get ready to open the chest in a hurry. Here on Surgery 101.
In this podcast, we'll talk about the trauma thoracotomy. This is an emergent procedure with the aim of getting you access to the vital structures in the chest. That is, the heart, the lungs, and some really big tubes. Imagine you're the general surgery junior resident on call. It's 2 a.m. and your pager goes off. You eagerly return the page because you know that at 2 a.m., there's a high likelihood that whoever's at the other end has something important to tell you. It's the emergency department calling, and they tell you they will promptly be receiving a patient who's been stabbed once in the chest. That's it, they say. We literally don't know anything else. Oh yeah, they add at the last minute. It sounds like they're having trouble with a low blood pressure. Sheer panic sets in. You can feel your heart rate pick up, and your mind is racing as you run to the emergency department. You calmly recite the mantra, airway, breathing, circulation. As you arrive, you see a seemingly calm patient lying in the trauma bay. A quick glance at the monitor will show that he has sinus tachycardia, but thankfully his blood pressure is okay. You breathe a sigh of relief. Perhaps this won't be so bad after all. Then, right in front of your eyes, the patient's monitor lets out a scream and the heart tracing is flat. The nurse looks at you and says, "I can't get a pulse." So what are you supposed to do now? So I'm Eric Biker, and this situation actually happened to me when I was a first year general surgery resident. So I got the call about this patient that had been stabbed in the chest. And I went down to the emergency department as I described, and that's exactly what I saw. This patient had coded right in front of me and needed an emergency department thoracotomy. So I'll be honest, I had never seen one of these before, and it totally scared the crap out of me. But we went on to do this, and it prompted me or motivated me to actually do a podcast on this because more people could learn from this experience. So let's just pause the scenario for a minute and consider that general surgery residents and emergency residents are responsible for learning how to perform numerous procedures. We start IVs, we put in central lines and chest tubes. We get a lot of practice doing this. Having said this, a commonly taught but seldom performed procedure is the resuscitative thoracotomy. If we remember that the suffix otomy describes the surgical opening of a structure, then it's intuitive that the emergent thoracotomy is performed with the intention of quickly accessing the thoracic cavity during the approach to trauma, as described by the ATLS course. I want you to visualize the anatomy. Picture a patient lying supine, that is on their back, with one side slightly elevated by placing a roll or bag of saline under the flank. The incision you're about to make will follow a transverse but slightly curving line along the inframammary fold, usually the fifth intercostal space, and spanning the anterior axillary line to the sternum, or occasionally beyond to involve the opposite side. So you want this incision to arc just like that of the adjacent rib. Remember, it's not a straight line. You also want to try to stay out of the pectoralis muscle because this tends to cause a lot of bleeding. Stay just below it. This is therefore appropriately named the anterolateral thoracotomy. When completed in its entirety and spanning the left and right side of the patient's chest, this is aptly named the clamshell thoracotomy. A Finichetto rib spreader is used to keep your incision open. Maybe you need more than one if your incision is really big, as in the clamshell. So, imagine what you might see when you make this incision. You're looking into the chest and can see the lung covered by its visceral pleura. Sometimes it's a good idea to only ventilate one lung. This will cause some collapse and give you a better view. The heart will take center stage, covered by the white fibrous pericardium. This pericardium can be opened to gain access to the heart, but be warned that the phrenic nerve runs along this structure on both sides. You can actually see it coursing posterolaterally. Always open the pericardium longitudinally so you don't cut these very important nerves. If your patient has pericardial tamponade, then you will be able to evacuate some blood in a big blood clot. So next, the heart is rotated out for repair. You may be able to plug the stab wound in the heart by placing your finger over, but not into, the hole. A Foley catheter can work well for temporarily sealing the hole. You simply inflate the balloon and pull back, very gently, while using a running suture or staples to reapproximate the myocardium. It seems crazy, but this can actually work. Great. The hole is sealed, but the heart isn't pumping. You may have to pump the heart with your hands. This is called open cardiac massage, and should be performed with a hinged, clapping motion of the hands with sequential closing from palms to fingers. Using one hand to squeeze the heart is a bad idea, as you risk a myocardial perforation with the thumb. Okay, but what if the heart won't start beating again? Sometimes you need to shock the heart using special paddles applied directly to the heart itself. If this doesn't work, then an aortic cross clamp is applied with the left lung retracted superiorly, placed just below the inferior pulmonary ligament, but just above the diaphragm. Try to visualize yourself doing this. There's no pulse, so the flaccid aorta is identified as the first structure encountered on top of the spine when approached from the left chest. If you clamp it, either with your fingers or with a vascular clamp, you're basically diverting blood that would normally go to the rest of the body, to the heart and brain. This is just like giving a patient some epinephrine as part of the ACLS code algorithm. However, in this way, you're literally squeezing the aorta instead of relying on a drug to do that for you. Although most emergency room doctors are familiar with the procedure, the ACLS manual advises that a qualified surgeon is present at the time of the patient's arrival to determine both the need for this procedure and the likely outcome. Okay, so this sounds incredibly stressful. Why in the world would you want to do this? Let's review the things that the trauma thoracotomy will allow you to achieve. This procedure may allow you to do a couple of really important things, such as, one, you can evacuate blood causing pericardial tamponade. In our case, this was the problem. Two, you can control intrathoracic hemorrhage, and you can cross clamp the descending aorta to slow blood loss occurring below the diaphragm, while increasing perfusion to the brain and heart. It's really important to realize that if the aorta is cross-clamped, then the injury distal to this must be repaired quickly, as there is significant morbidity associated with reperfusion more than 30 minutes later. This is likely related to the systemic effects that follow when you wash out inflammatory and oxidative mediators formed during the period of no oxygen delivery. Third, you can perform open cardiac massage. We know that closed chest compressions in a hypovolemic patient, or one with tamponade, have been shown to be very ineffective. Although every effort is made to replete intravascular volume, inadequate CPR can actually warrant a thoracotomy, in theory. Okay, so we know what we can do, but in whom should we actually do this? The indications for performing a resuscitative thoracotomy are numerous. As taught by the ATLS program, they include any patient who has sustained a penetrating thoracic injury and either loses their pulse in the emergency department or within 15 minutes of arrival, yet maintains myocardial electrical activity. And they need to have signs of life, which includes reactive pupils, spontaneous movement, or an organized rhythm on the ECG. In penetrating trauma, this is likely to be due to cardiac tamponade, an intrathoracic or intra-abdominal hemorrhage, or an extremity hemorrhage. So you know where it is, how to do it, and what it offers you. So how successful is this? After an isolated cardiac injury, 35% of patients presenting in shock and 25% without vital signs for example, a pulse or obtainable blood pressure, are actually resuscitated after isolated penetrating injury to the heart. For all penetrating wounds, the survival rate is about 15%. Blunt trauma is a different story, however. A patient who has sustained blunt thoracic injury and arrives pulseless for more than a couple of minutes is not a candidate for the emergency room resuscitative thoracotomy, even if they have evidence of myocardial electrical activity, or PEA. Studies have shown no better than 2% survival among patients in shock and less than 1% survival among those with no vital signs. Clearly, patients undergoing CPR upon arrival to the emergency department should undergo emergency department thoracotomy very selectively based on injury and transport time. Some sources, other than the ACLS course, actually describe performing this procedure for ultrasound-confirmed tamponade in the blunt trauma patient. Okay, so who shouldn't we do this to? Remember, people with penetrating trauma requiring CPR for more than 15 minutes and no signs of life, these may include no pupillary response, respiratory effort, or motor activity, and blunt trauma requiring CPR longer than 5 minutes and no signs of life or a systole. If you think about what this procedure involves, there are many obvious hazards to the surgeon. First of all, the resuscitative thoracotomy is done quickly, under a lot of pressure, and requires working around broken or cut ribs that pose a significant laceration risk. In addition to the occupational hazards, patients who have lost their pulse are at a greater risk for brain ischemia due to their poor perfusion. Unfortunately, neurological outcome can be poor despite a seemingly successful resuscitation. Some guidelines attempting to help us select patients with a better outcome say that the patient needs to sustain a systolic blood pressure, of 70 millimeters of mercury after an emergency department thoracotomy to be considered resuscitatable and hence transported to the operating room for definitive repair. This guideline is important because neurological outcomes are often poor with a lower blood pressure, and the residual quality of life and level of functioning must be strongly considered before we continue. Finally, we need to be aware of the resources being used whenever we decide to do something. A trip to the operating room and subsequent intensive care can be not only extremely expensive, but may also mean that another patient who may need these resources will not have access to them. So in summary, you have to remember that this is a procedure that you're not going to get to see very often and you won't get to do very often, so you have to be prepared. It helps if you listen to this podcast. Second, you have to know who you're doing this to. This is a patient who has penetrating trauma to the chest, is pulseless, and recently had normal vital signs. Third, you have to know where you're going to do this. This incision is done in the fifth intercostal space, in the inframammary fold. And finally, don't be afraid or don't be worried if this procedure scares you a lot. In my case, I have to admit I almost crapped my pants.
That's it for trauma thoracotomy. I have to agree with Eric, actually. I remember when I was a resident, one night I went down to the emergency department and it was strangely quiet. No nurses, no doctors, not sure what was happening. And I eventually followed the sound of a beeping cardiac monitor all the way into the trauma room. And there I found my senior colleague in the middle of a trauma thoracotomy and I suddenly had to scrub in and help him out. And it was a terrifying experience and I still remember it to this day. So you may never be called upon to do this, but if you are, you need to know the basics. And Eric's done a really good job of covering those. Please let us know what you think of Surgery 101. You can email us at surgerypodcast@gmail.com or send us a tweet or find us on the Facebook page. Also, please check out the Surgery 101 network at surgery101.org to request and submit new episodes. And also check out our app for the iPhone and Android phones. Don't forget Surgery 101 notes. We have a set of notes with this week's episode as well. That's all for this week. So thanks for listening to our podcast. And we'll see you back here next week on Surgery 101.